that's not working too well for me because it's all lending up right up in here and stuff. So, anyhow, you won't hug me? All right. I don't think I'm any kind of sick. It's just sakes alive. Yeah, allergies or something has just kicked up and got me going. So I've got water in my halls up here. I'm going to try hard not to be coughing, sniffing too much, but y'all bear with me. All right, so Scheme of Redemption. I want to thank whoever jumped in last week and made things happen. I know Doug and Steve were instrumental in that. We kind of dipped out at the last minute and made our way to Alabama to try to get out of the way of this hurricane that was coming through. So I told them Wednesday afternoon, guys, it just looks like we're not going to be staying in town. So I know they kind of jumped in. And so anybody else that helped out, thank you so much. I really appreciate the very last minute help. All right, so we're talking about the Scheme of Redemption, and you know we've gone over these goals a lot, and just a quick recap. You know, we're basically trying to get an idea of what the story of the Bible is all about, and this story is all about God buying back mankind. You know, in the beginning, God made everything; it was beautiful, it's perfect. There's not a thing wrong with it, not a thing wrong in the lives of mankind. No stress and strife and all the ins and outs that we face on a day-to-day basis today. And we just messed all that up. We destroyed it all. And we made a mess of everything. And so God then implemented the plan that he had in his mind before the first "let there be" was ever even spoken. And that plan was put into motion, and God immediately began making his way to the cross. And then the rest of the story from there, as Paul Harvey says, the rest of the story is all, it's just that. It is the story of how God moved from our problem of sin to his solution of his son on the cross. And then after the cross, it's all about this thing called the church. This beautiful family is what it is. It's far more than just some social club. It's far more than just some organization that gets together and tries to do some good works and things like that. We're a family. We're all brothers and sisters with one another, and we have a Father, and that Father is God. And that says a lot about who God is. And that's one thing that really sets Christianity out amongst any other world religion that we know of today. And there's a lot of things, you know. There are a lot of things that as we have gone through this study that I've said, you know, this is something that really makes us stand out, that makes us different. This is another one of those things. You know, I can't think of another world religion where the God has this father-child relationship like we do. This very intimate relationship. It just doesn't exist. And so that's one wonderful thing about Christianity. And it's one of the things that we have to offer to this lost and dying world. You know, we don't have some God who's far off and can't hear and can't understand. You know, we've got one that has walked in our shoes, has lived right here on this earth with us, has put himself within us, his children today, through the Holy Spirit. And so there's so many wonderful things about redemption and being in the family of God, and that's what the story of the Bible is all about. You know, there's a lot of things that could have been put into this book. I mean, a whole lot of things. But the things that we have written are for our understanding, for our learning of how our problem of sin, how God resolved it, and how we can be in that relationship with him and with one another. And so that's what it's all about. So we've looked at several, you know, we've kind of compartmentalized the story so far. And it is a story, and I want us to keep that in mind. This is not some book that's just full of random different stories and books, you know. It is one novel. It truly is, and we need to see it as that. And so as we move our way through the novel, we see, you know, certain things that we can kind of break down to kind of help us get an overview of what's going on, a timeline of sort. And so we can see Genesis 1 and 2, that idea of God in perfection, man in innocence. Genesis 3 through 12, the background of redemption. And that's when we see the story of Cain, we see the story of Noah, and how God, you know, that whole time period between Genesis 3, when sin entered the earth, leading all the way up to Abraham, and that whole gap there, and the things that God accomplished in there in his path to the cross. Genesis 12 through 50, redemption through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. It's there we learn of the three promises that God made. All right, those promises that God made to Abraham, that he would make Abraham a great nation. And from him, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And now that I'm sitting here asking, I'm going blank. What was the third one? I'm drawing a blank. Anybody can tell me? What's that? Their number? See, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. They would inherit the land of Canaan. There we go. Drawing a blank. Yeah, and those three promises are critical, okay? We really need to keep those in mind as we move on from here, because we'll see those things play out. And they'll culminate in that third promise of, through the seed of Abraham, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. And of course, we see that in who? Jesus. That's right. And so those promises are going to be played out from Abraham on. And we see that those promises were passed on verbatim to Isaac and Jacob. And Jacob on his deathbed told these promises to Joseph, said, look, this is going to happen. These were the promises. And so from Joseph, we see how Israel ended up moving into Egypt. And after a while, Egypt, the Pharaoh over Egypt arose that didn't know Joseph. You know, Joseph saved Egypt. He saved all the people around. You know, God through Joseph worked in a very, very powerful way to save loads of people, namely Joseph's brothers. Because from that came the tribe of Israel. And we've talked about how Joseph is one of those pivotal points in history, in biblical history. You know, what would have happened had he failed? You know, now we would say, well, God would have just risen up somebody else. Yes, there's truth to that. But we see that Joseph is one of these pivotal points. You know, had he failed, had he not been faithful to God and lived that life that God wanted him to live, his brothers very well may have died of starvation. The nation of Israel never would come to be. And of course, Christ never would come to be. And you and I would be in really bad shape right now. And so we learn through that the faith of Joseph. And we talked about how Joseph's faith and his trust in God moved him to simply do what he had to do. And we talked about how as Joseph was going through all this, he had no idea what was going on. You know, we don't remember we never see God coming to him and say, now, Joseph, look, you're about to be sold into slavery, but I'm going to be with you, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. Joseph never was told all that. Joseph just simply did the right thing. And I appreciate what William said in his prayer tonight, you know, help us to do the right thing even when it's hard. And Joseph did. It was extremely hard for him, but nonetheless, he did the right thing. And because of that, God was able to use him and work through him to change history. And could the same happen with us? You know, I seriously doubt as Joseph was sitting in the bottom of that pit that he thought, you know what? The suffering I'm going through right now is going to lead to something big, and it's going to change the lives of mankind forever. I guarantee you he wasn't thinking that, but it's true. What about us? You know, what about the way we live? You know, you may go through hard times, you may go through tough times, and have no clue why it's even happening to you. Maybe, just maybe, God is using that to build you up, to put you in place in a position that he needs you, that could change the course of history. Folks, you have no idea. I have no idea. The simple truth of the matter is, we need to be living for God, following through, doing what's right, living by faith every day, nonstop. And God can do mighty and powerful things with us. And so I love that story of Joseph and all that we see there, but in Exodus 1 through 12, we see slavery and judgment on Egypt. So we've been talking about that a lot lately. We talked about how the Pharaoh came up that didn't know Joseph, enslaved all the Israelites. They were put into hard labor. Then Moses comes, and Moses meets with God at the burning bush. And God says, hey, look, I'm about to free my people here. And so a series of plagues take place, and the Israelites are eventually let go. And so now they're on the move. So now we're in Exodus 13 through 18, this two-month journey to Mount Sinai. And I want us to spend some time here because, even though the journey to Sinai doesn't seem like a big deal, a lot of big things take place. And there's a lot of life lessons for us to learn in that journey. And so I want to spend some time there and, seeing what we can extract out of that. It's one of the goals of this study, too, is to learn more about God and learn about more about who He is and what He likes, what He doesn't like, to mold ourselves and conform ourselves more to His likeness, to follow His Son. Jesus was that perfect embodiment of what God is and what God desires. And it's our job to try to mold ourselves to that and change ourselves to that. And so there's a lot of good lessons to learn here that will help us be better children and better followers of God. Okay. All right, so Israel has been on the move. They've left Egypt after the 10th plague of the firstborn, or the death of the firstborn. And as they're on their way, Pharaoh and his servants, they have another change of heart. And they after the catastrophe kind of passes by, as is typical, has been typical with Pharaoh, they get to talking and they realize, man, we're in a mess here. The Israelite people, those slaves of ours, they ran a lot of our economy. They did a lot of stuff for us. They kind of helped run our lives here and keep our business afloat. They're gone. Oh, man. This was a big deal to them. This was a big loss to Egypt. And so when they finally sat down and started considering this and thinking it out, they said, let's go back out there, round them up, and bring them back. And so they go after Israel again, and that's kind of where we're at right now. So the Israelites are moving near to the Red Sea, and the Egyptians are on the move coming after them. So Exodus 14, chapter 10 through 12, and I think we got several slides here if I remember correctly. So need some readers, please. All right, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. And we hit on these slides a couple weeks ago. And so basically what they were saying is that it would be better to be enslaved to Egypt than to be set free by God. What an absurd statement, right? But at the same time, we see people saying that today. How many times do we see people give their lives over to God, commit themselves to the Lord, and then after a while, they turn back to that old way? And the idea there is, it's better to be enslaved to sin than be set free by God. To us, what an absurd statement. But what a truth it is. We see it happen all the time. And it was no difference with the Israelites here. But this will be an attitude that we will see played out over and over and over and over and over and over again, especially in the journey from here to the Jordan River. As you all are very well aware of, and we'll get to it eventually, maybe another 15 weeks or so. What's so funny, Sue? Eventually we'll get to, the 40-year wandering. And so there's a lot of time that takes place between this point here and the crossing of the Jordan River. And all through that, all we see is complaint after complaint after complaint after complaint after complaint after complaint. It just kind of sounds like a broken record after a while as you read through those passages. And, we see God's power is shown, yet they still doubt, they have fear, and they long for Egypt again, when seemingly bad things start happening. And you would think that after everything they just saw, this isn't, I don't know the timeline of the plagues. I really don't know how, you know, much time the 10 plagues covered, but I don't think it was that much time. I think it was a relatively short period of time. I don't know if it was days or weeks or months. I don't know. But I'm certain it was a relatively short period of time. And so here the Israelites have seen God act in unbelievably mighty and powerful ways. And it should be just outrageously obvious to them by now that, well, God's got this. And we really don't need to be concerned. But that's not the case that we see. But I wonder, are we any different? You know, sometimes, man, we ride these Israelites so hard, and I felt this way for a long time because I used to give them a hard time too. And, you know, we ride the Israelites so hard, but I wonder, are we any different? Chuck, and then we'll get to you.
People don't like change.
Mm.
You see it at work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going out and people with little to no faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we saw all these things happen, but I still don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
I fear the unknown. I understand the known. Don't like the change. I mean, I can see it in us.
Mm-hmm.
It was what they knew. It was the evil they knew. And they just, of course, then they went to hyperbole to say, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
You know? It was Chicken Little all over the place.
Yeah.
Whenever something started to go bad, it was, it's going to go bad and we're all going to die.
Yeah.
It's just, it is people. People do that. And they look for the first situation, something's going wrong, taking the new path. Say, see, we should have stayed the way we were.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
It does. It absolutely does.
I have a question.
Okay.
How familiar were people of Israel with God?
How familiar were the people of Israel with God? I think it's clear that there was some knowledge. But as far as his involvement in their life, there probably wasn't much for, you know, a number of hundreds of years. I don't, you know.
We know that Joseph was.
Yeah, we know that Joseph was, and, you know, I'm certain those stories were passed down. I see the evidence that they were familiar with the promises made, and that the idea that, you know, back in Genesis 15, when God first made these promises to Abraham, he said, look, you know, I'm going to make this happen, but before that happens, your people are going to be in, you know, my people are going to be enslaved in Egypt for 400 years. And so I think the people knew that, because when Moses spoke to God in the burning bush, there was some conversation about that. And you kind of get the idea there that Moses was aware of it, and God told Moses to go talk to the leaders of Israel. He said, go back, tell them we're about to get out of here. And we kind of see some, oh, it's really happening. You know, we kind of see that attitude going on. So I get the vibe that they were familiar with Abraham and all the stories of old and the promises that had been made. But as far as just direct interaction on a daily basis, probably not much.
And we know that they had become involved with the God's
people. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Right.
And yet, the archaeological evidence and what he told Moses, he sent Moses because people were crying out to him. So there had to be some faith there.
People were crying out to Moses or to God?
Crying out to God.
Okay.
That's why God sent Moses.
I got you. Okay, sure. Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, just have him not speak to us no more. Yeah. Yeah, you know, but I can definitely see some of this in my own life, you know, when, man, something comes on real fast and it's, you know, the knees start getting wobbly, don't they, you know? And so we can certainly understand where they're coming from. And I try not to be one that beats down the Israelites too hard, because I can't say that I would be any different. And that's just based on the experience of my own life here and now after the cross. I could imagine what it must have been like back then. Chuck?
Also, not everybody that was in this 1.5 million strong people were Israelites. Mm-hmm. Some descendants. There were people that were probably slaves that got out at the same time you did. And they're referred to as rabble, because they They're stirring the pot some too. They came out with the people of God, but they were not people of God.
When the Israelites went to Egypt, they carried their slaves with them.
Yeah, and you know, the Bible does teach that there were others that came out with them, and that was most likely a reason why God gave the, you know, when he laid out the rules for the Passover, you know, the stranger among you, here's the rules on how they are to partake of the Passover, whether they can or cannot, you know, and it tied it back all into the circumcision stuff. So yeah, absolutely. Any other comments? All right, so the parting of the Red Sea. I went around and tried to find some images. Man, that must have been a sight to see. You know, I've imagined many times what it must have been like to walk through that thing. And I don't know, that would have been an interesting sight. So, can I get a reader? Exodus 14, 16 through 17. This is God speaking to Moses here. All right, Exodus 14, 21 through 23.
On the dry land, and the waters were like a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. The Egyptians took up the pursuit, and all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen went in after them in the midst of the sea.
All right. Exodus 14, 24 through 25, just continuing on. Man, what a powerful statement, huh? All right, carrying on. 26 through 28. All right, verses 30 through 31. Remain that way for long, will it? You know, the people fear the Lord seeing this. You know, so here just on one side of the Red Sea, their knees are knocking. Moses, we should have just stayed in Egypt. Come on, man. You know, all this stuff happened. You bring us out here, now we're just going to die. Okay, yeah, we would have been much better off. Now they cross over and they believe the Lord and his servant Moses. But it truly won't stay that way for long. Mike, you look like you're about ready to say something. No? Okay. All right, so, you know, in our study so far, we've seen faith grow, haven't we? You remember the story of Abraham. We kind of saw Abraham a little shaky there at first, you know, when he would come into some of these towns, the cities. Sarah, you know, these guys are going to sue you. You're a really beautiful woman, so they're just going to, like, you know, kill me and take you. So let's just tell everybody you're my sister, and that way nobody will hurt me. And he does this twice, you know, but, you know, as we see Abraham go and move, we see his faith finally get to a point where God says something, God's got it, no problem. And so we see Abraham start to take on a very stronger, more active faith of one that just really doesn't fear and have questions anymore. And we see that with Joseph. You know, as Joseph went through, he kept his faith in God up. And finally, when he was there talking to his brothers, he was able to look back and say, look, you know, cause you remember when Jacob died? His brothers thought what? What'd they think? What were his brothers afraid of when their dad died? Yeah, he's going to take revenge and kill him. And so they came to him, you know, threw themselves before him, said, we're sorry, please, you know, please have mercy on us. And Joseph's like, stop, get up, you know, we're family, it's all good. Yeah, you know, you meant this for evil, but God meant this for good. All right, this was the Lord's hand at work. And so he was able to look back across the time and see that how God had used these terrible things to bring him to where he is now. And Joseph recognized that. And even when at the end of Joseph's life, you know, if you remember, he was telling his brothers and his family and others that were still alive at the time when he was dying, he was saying, look, one of these days, God is going to bring you guys out of this place. Don't y'all leave me here. You take me with you. And we see Moses doing that. You know, that's one of the things Moses did. When they were heading out of town, he grabbed the box of Joseph's bones, and Joseph went along with him. And so even Joseph had that faith. You know, we saw Joseph's faith grow. And we've also are beginning to see Moses' faith grow. You know, at first, Moses was like, well, God, I'm not the guy you need to be sending. I can't speak good. You know, it was just one little thing after the next. And that God and Moses were kind of arguing over there. And we see God kind of getting ill with Moses a little bit. But now we're starting to see Moses grow a lot of courage here. You know, as the plagues went on, suddenly he came walking into Pharaoh a little more taller and say, look here, man, you're going to let us go one way or the other. And so we started seeing his courage grow and his faith grow. And now here he is at the Red Sea, and we see that Moses has built up a tremendous amount of faith through the plagues. And so, you know, when we're talking about the deepening of our faith, you know, we need to focus on these things that are going on. You know, we see these things taking place, but we don't necessarily see the same thing with Israel. You know, even though Israel had seen God perform numerous powerful and undeniable works, they were still had a lot of fear and doubt. And, you know, again, I want to focus on that idea of these being undeniable works. You know, sometimes in our life, we just have these great things happen. And, wow, what a coincidence. Man, who knew? You know, I just randomly got that raise at work. I randomly got that bonus or that promotion or la-di-da. What do you know? Maybe we ought to change our thinking. You know, maybe we ought to stop chalking things up to just sheer coincidence and wow. You know, I mean, the simple fact of the matter is, luck is not real. You know, we wish this idea of, hey, good luck, good luck, good luck. There's no such thing as luck. When it comes down to it, it's just not real. It's a fabricated thing in our minds, you know, that we like to just toss around. Folks, all good things come from above, do they not? And so we need to give God the glory and God the credit for every good thing that happens in our life because it's all from Him. And we don't need to be afraid to share that amongst our friends. You know, some of the best ways that you can share God is just to simply say, man, the Lord really blessed me here. You know, and you know, if you go into your coworkers or your classmates at school or what, you know, whoever it may be that, I'm sitting here acting like I'm teaching to a group of teenagers, your classmates at school, you know, your coworkers or your friends, whoever it may be, you know, when good things happen, you know, we like to go in there and say, hey, guess what, man, I got some great news. Let's drop the name of God in that conversation. The Lord is just so good. Wow, he's really blessed me. Folks, those kind of things are what is gonna get people's attention, okay? If you sometimes come to people and say, hey, I'd really like to sit down and have a Bible study with you. Yeah, all right. Okay, well, how about next Thursday? Ah, you know what, man, I got something going on. it's not always easy just to walk right up and get some conversation struck up that way. But if you just, you know, daily and frequently and regularly speak of the Lord and the things that he's doing in your life, after a while that stuff starts to rub off on people. And so let us not be afraid to talk about the Lord. And let us not just chalk up the crazy things that seem to just fall in our lap. Let's not chalk them up to coincidence and goodwill and good fortune. But instead, give the glory to God and let everybody know. Mike?
Waved his hand.
Boy, wasn't that unbelievable? You know, I mean, we see these things. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I've heard people talking about it on the, you know, like on Facebook and stuff. Yeah, man, that thing just, at the last minute, it just swerved out and back out into the ocean. And, wow, they just said that made all the difference. Just randomly happened, huh? You know? Let's don't be afraid to give God some glory on these things. And we got to be talking. We have to be talking. All right, moving along. So is our faith growing and maturing? Are we recognizing the hand of God at work in our life? You know, is our faith rendering change and growth and action in our life? You know, this is one thing that we see. As we see faith growing in some of these great people, you know, again, I like to go back to that Hebrews 11, that hall of faith, as I like to call it. You know, as we see faith growing in these people, we see them taking tremendous actions and doing things and being active. You know, is our faith reflecting that? Is our faith growing and is it reflecting a change in our life? Are people seeing us taking actions that just seem absurd and crazy? But yet, we know it's driven by faith. You know, are people seeing those kinds of things in our life? Are we taking that leap into the unknown, knowing that God will provide? You know, that is a hard thing to do. I have had to do it in my own life, so I understand. It's not easy. You know, there's some things and you are just up against the wall and you say, well, I have a choice to make. If I go this way, it's kind of like Chuck was saying, you know, if I go this way, it hurts, there's some painful things there, but I know what's there. I don't know what's over here, though. And so going through that door takes faith. And that is not an easy thing to do. But as we grow, as our faith grows, it should start becoming easier to do those things and walk through those doors. It at some point in our Christian life and our Christian maturity, we should reach a point where we're clearly and confidently able to say, I have no idea how it's going to work out, but God's got it. I'm not worried about it. Walk by faith, that's right.
If we can see it, it's not faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, just in my own life, God has always come through. Not one time has he dropped me. Not once. Usually more than that. You know? Well, I'm serious, you know, I mean, and I guess I'm just speaking from my own personal experience. I've learned to stop asking for things to God. I want it to go this way, this way, and this way. You know, but instead just saying, God, I have no idea what's going to happen. I have no idea. I'm just trusting you to handle it for me. I'm just going to sit back, and I'm looking forward to what you're going to do with it. And it happens every time. I mean, I could give you guys several mighty examples of just in my own life of how God has worked in unbelievable ways. And you sit here and just, you can't help but be in awe of what you see taking place. And so, me personally, I've learned to stop asking, here's what I want, God. Just because I know He's going to handle it. And if we truly believe the words of the Bible, then we'll know that God's will is what's best for us in the first place, right? It was God's will for Joseph to face some of the things that he did. Was that fun for Joseph? Did it hurt? Of course. But it worked out really well for him, right? And so I think sometimes it's just best for us not to be asking God necessarily, you know, say, here's exactly how I want it to go, but just sit back and say, you've got it, I trust you, work your thing. Yes, ma'am. You're welcome.
But just with deepening faith, and I do sometimes ask God for exactly what it is that I want and the way that I want it to go, but I also ask for Him to give me what He sees I need if I don't get that, so that I'm not just in despair if I don't get what I want.
Sure.
And that way, I place it back in His hands.
Yeah.
And that works.
It does, yeah. Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll share a personal example with you. This happened very recently. So, Alicia and I, for those who may not know me, my wife and I have 6 children, and so 8 people is a rather large family, along with 2 dogs and a rabbit and a cat as well. And yeah, we were all packed up in the car heading to Alabama last weekend as well. That was fun. But at the time, we were, so for the past 3 years now, we've been living in, I think it's about a 1,200 to 1,300 square foot house. Rather small house for 8 people. Okay, I mean, we were crammed in like sardines, I'm not going to lie. And so, you know, we had kind of reached critical max in this house, and Alicia and I were talking, and it's like, you know, we really need to increase the size of our house here. I mean, we're just kind of maxing out. And so we got to shopping around, and folks, I don't know if y'all have, you know, we were looking for a rental house still. We're not at a point where we're ready to purchase a home right yet. And so we're looking around for rental houses. I don't know if you guys have shopped around for rental houses or not, but it's unbelievably expensive in Brevard County to rent a house. I mean, incredibly expensive. We were looking at, you know, $600 and $700 increases in our monthly payment, and I was sitting here scratching my head going, how in the world are we going to swing this? And so, but you know, we had to do something, and so we were just going to figure it out, make it happen. And I informed our landlord, who at the time was a good buddy of mine, that hey, you know, we're going to be moving out here at the end of the month. And that was at the beginning of August, and we were going to be moving out at the end of August and hopefully in a new home by September. And so he said, all right, well, that's fine. He said, I'm tired of having this thing. I'm just going to go ahead and put it up on the market. So he dropped a for sale sign in the front yard. And I mean, within 2 days, he was having competing offers on the house, and somebody had already purchased the thing. And so we had no choice but to be out by the end of August. And I was like, boy, you know, I didn't really expect it to go that fast, you know. But I mean, it went like wildfire. And so Alicia and I had been shopping around looking for different houses, and directly across the street from me was Mr. Larry. Mr. Larry is a 82-year-old man, I believe. He lives by himself, and we had generated a good friendship and a good relationship with him over the years, and he came and knocked on the door one day. And Larry's a real wiry man. And he came, he said, I noticed you got a for sale sign in your yard. I said, yeah, I do. He said, we're going to be moving on, Mr. Larry. And he said, well, he said, I just want to let you know that I have a rental house just a few blocks away, and it's right across the street from my son. And my tenants just informed me yesterday that they're going to be moving out at the end of the month. And so if you guys want it, it's yours. Folks, it's a 5-bedroom house with a massive backyard, bigger than what we got now, and the rent was only $75 more a month. Okay, and this is what I'm talking about, all right? Lee should probably kill me if I was sharing our personal stories like that, but she tends to not like to talk to stuff. But I say all that to say that we need to let our faith move, okay? Sometimes it just requires us letting go and say, I have no idea. I have no idea how it's going to work out. And watch the Lord move. He will. And it's those things that need to motivate us to say, God has got this. And that, boy, you start feeling the fear just kind of shed off. And it emboldens. And it gives you that courage to push forward and look forward to the next thing that comes. Like, all right, we'll see how God handles that one too, you know. It's really awesome to experience those things, and I love it. I don't always like what we have to go through sometimes to experience those things, but man, I love seeing God just work in those powerful ways. It's such a motivator and such a comforting thing, and continues to build me and bring me closer to Him. All right, so this is what I want to talk about here. This is kind of what I've been talking about here for the past 10 minutes now. You know, Exodus 14, 13 through 14. And so the people are fearing. This is kind of going back in time here, all right? I should have probably had this slide several back, but this is before the crossing. Israelites see the Egyptians coming after them. They start getting scared, and you know, we should have stayed back there in Egypt. And Moses says, do not fear, stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see them again forever. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. Wow. Now, notice that God had not told Moses, hey, here's what I'm going to do to help y'all out of this situation, okay? You're going to part the Red Sea, you guys are going to walk right across, the Egyptians are going to come after you, and I'm going to... Moses didn't know all that. God had not related that information to him. But see, by this time, Moses' faith had come that far to say, guys, shut up. Quit worrying about it. Just sit here and watch what God's going to do. You won't have to lift a finger. You won't have to say anything. Just sit here and watch. And he did. And I love that thing. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent. And should that be a comfort to us? Folks, I'm telling you, God will do the same thing for us. We're His children. We're His kids. You know, which one of us parents would not do such things for our children? God's a lot better father than I am. And so we don't need to fear these things. You know, this gives me a lot of comfort. James 1, 2 through 4, consider it all joy when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Endurance, running a marathon. You guys ever just get up one day and go run a marathon? So you usually we just go out like the day before, go jog a little bit, then we're ready, right? We build up that endurance in that day? No, endurance is built over time. So is faith, okay? And so we don't need to get down on ourselves when we don't let faith move. Faith is a growth process. When we pray, and James tells us here, you know, don't be praying while doubting. You know, so if you pray while doubting, that's just like being tossed out on the surf of the sea. You know, you're just being kind of tossed around like, whatever. You know, pray with confidence. Pray with faith, knowing that the Lord will pull through. And so these passages here, we'll get into that some next week. Next week, I'm going to spend some time on looking at the different grumblings and complaints of the Israelites and all. And so we'll pick up there next week. Any questions or comments? Thoughts? All right, guys, thanks for your attention. B?
While we're waiting on God, having faith that God's going to move and make things happen for us, we got to live by faith.
Yes, we absolutely do.
We've got to not, you should have
Yes. Yeah, and that's the truth that we see with Abraham, Moses, Noah, you know, some of these guys, they were all men who were living and following after God. Yeah, and so it definitely worked out far more to their favor when they're living that faithful life. Sure. All right, guys. Bobby?
We need to recognize, God, when tragedy happens.
Mm.
He's there.
He
we
is.
We never see it, we don't give no praise.
Sure.
I mean, if you were just to take the Twin Towers, on any given day, between the two of them, there's 25,000 people working there. And there's 5,000 visitors.